You're listening to Startup Acquisition Stories, a podcast featuring the stories of startup founders and buyers who have successfully gone through an acquisition process using Acquire.com, the world's number one startup acquisition marketplace. To date, Acquire.com has helped thousands of startups get acquired and facilitated hundreds of millions in closed deal volume. Here's your host, Andrew Gostecki.
All right. I'm here with Luke Shepherd, who recently got acquired for $500,000 at age 23. Luke, how are you doing today?
Yeah, I'm doing great. How about you?
Doing good. Again, huge congrats on the acquisition. It was a fun one to work on with you. But for those that may not know you, do you want to give a brief introduction of yourself?
Yeah. So my name's Luke Shepherd. I just graduated from college. I went to BYU. While I was there, I started a company called Revive Ratings. Essentially, what we did is we just helped small businesses to get more reviews on Google. And yeah, so it was a wild ride, you know, getting that all the way to close, but super fun.
What made you start the business in terms of, did you see like a market opportunity? Like, I'm just amazed that you're able to do this at age 23.
Yeah. I mean, so I was 21 when I started it. Right. And so what had happened is I had started working for a SaaS business, and it was really cool. They work with local businesses doing some sort of SEO, but I just felt like there's a couple of things that if they started doing this, if they started doing that, if they started targeting this niche, you know, they could really just explode with growth. And, you know, as soon as I started thinking those things, I'm like, well, why can't I go do that on my own? So I left, you know, we built an entirely new product, but it still focuses on SEO, right? That's the purpose of those reviews. But we targeted insurance agents and just really just doubled down on that niche.
I love that. I love, especially my previous, I may have told you this, but we sold to small businesses at my first company, and
yeah,
we had a feature within our mobile apps that would help drive more Google reviews.
Cause
if you type in, cause as you know, if you type in like insurance agent in, I don't know, San Mateo or whatever city you're in, you'll rank at the top. So it's super important. Tell me about how you got your first customers. Cause I know selling to insurance people isn't, you know, the most straightforward thing. How'd you figure that out?
I mean, you know, it is and it isn't. Like, now that I'm out of the industry, I feel okay saying this. Insurance agencies were the easiest clientele to start with because I started without like knowledge of like Apollo or Seamless or Zoom Info. So I didn't know how to find people's names online. So if you look it up, just look up insurance agencies near me, you're going to see it's like Allstate Insurance, Todd Smith, Allstate Insurance, you know, Sam Johnson, Allstate Insurance, Luke Shepherd. So it says the name of the decision maker right there. And so that's why I chose insurance agencies, because I knew exactly who I needed to talk to, and there was one gatekeeper in the way.
Was your, to get the first customer, was it a like a direct sales approach? Like you just cold called them?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was all, that was our first 200 customers. Yes, all cold called.
All by you?
I mean, mostly by me. We started hiring cold callers as time went on, but I probably did the first 30 to 40, like fully self-sourced. And then we brought in lead setters and I would close their deals. And then eventually we brought in a few closers to help close.
Good for you, man. I mean, learning sales just for any entrepreneur is so big. Everything you do when you're building a company is sales.
So yeah.
I love that. Tell me about, okay, so you build the business, it's starting to take off. Was there like a moment where you kind of sat back and you're like I really got something on my hands. Like customers are signing up faster than you thought. Did you have a day like that?
I mean, I would say like every month I had a day like that. And then every month there was also a day where I was like, well, I'm going to lose all my money on this. So it was just super up and down. And
that's the life of an entrepreneur where, you know, on Monday you're like, you know, I'm going to be a billionaire. And then Tuesday you're like, I'm going to go broke.
Yeah. So. It's funny. I was telling my wife yesterday that we sold Revive at like exactly like, I would say the medium of our expectation, right? There was, on one end of the spectrum, it's like, I'm never going to have to work again when I sell this, you know, because it was always, because I started in college and it was like, I want to sell it in 2 years, right? Get a first acquisition under my belt. And so I was like, I was like, I really want to get like $5 million off of it. But some days I'd be like, no, I'm getting nothing out of it. And It's funny because it was like just where we sold it. I'm like, that's like the middle of our expectations, you know?
I mean, you did absolutely fantastic with this outcome. And I love how you started in college because that's when I started too, man. Like I was telling you previously, it's the best time to start a business because you don't have, you know, a lot of responsibilities. You don't necessarily have like a mortgage yet or anything like that. And you can really go for it. And you did. And you accomplished it.
Well, then the other cool thing about college is like, kind of like the secret is you just, no one sees you as a threat, right? So I would actually like spend like probably like 30 minutes a week just messaging competitors on LinkedIn, their CEOs and stuff. And like, hey, you know, I'm in college. I started a business. We kind of compete with you. I've only got 100 customers though. Would you mind if I took you out to lunch or something? And I mean, no joke. When I tell you 95% of them said yes.
That is great advice for any young entrepreneur listening. And it's true. I remember that for myself as well, where people are more willing to just give you, you know, more experienced entrepreneurs are willing to just mentor you because you're just starting your journey. And it's just, you know, so few start the path at a young age, especially, you know, as successfully as you. So That's an interesting tip. I never did that. I never reached out to like GoDaddy and was like, hey, can I talk to your CEO?
I was always shocked. It was really cool. I liked it a lot.
Nice. Well, let's move into the acquisition process. So I was along for this journey with you, and it had some interesting twists and turns. let me ask you this. Okay, so the wire hits your bank account, $500,000. What did that feel like, man?
Oh, it's so awesome. I mean, like, you really just can't. I mean, it's so cool just knowing, like, you know, I could go off and just go live in like some third world country and do nothing for the next 3 years. And I could, you know, just not even worry about money for a second. You know, obviously, that's not what I'm going to do. I'm putting it into something new. But it's, it was awesome just kind of putting a dollar value to the work that I'd done, you know?
You cash in your chips, dude. I always say, you know, you want to be like Tom from MySpace and cash in the chips when you can. Tell me about, okay, so let's take it back to the top though. So Revive Ratings, it's going good. It's growing. You got a lot of happy customers. Well, walk me through, you know, when you first listed on Acquire.com, you know, what was your expectations and what was like the first 2 weeks like?
Yeah. So I had like, I have a good friend and a mentor, and he had told me about Acquire.com when I told him I was getting ready to sell. And so he gave me some advice, which was like, make sure your business is profitable, you know, because I feel like we're always told when you start a SaaS business, like, oh, you're going to be valued off of profit. Off of revenue, right? You're going to get 3 to 5 times whatever your revenue is. That's true in some cases and maybe in a different economy, but like he just told me like, now you're going to be valued off of profitability and just the ability for the business to run without you. And so, you know, kind of hearing that, I was like, okay, let's cut back on as many expenses as we can. Maybe we slow our outbound down just a little bit to make sure that we're running just at the most efficient rate. And so that was probably like 2 months before the acquisition, or 2 months before we posted it on Acquire. When we posted it, we got some pretty immediate interest. And there was, you know, we had our first buyer and, you know, things fell through with him after about a month of negotiating. That was a little bit discouraging. And then we did find our buyer after that. So
that, I love the pre-listing preparation because you're right. Yeah. You're going to be, because there's financial buyers and strategic buyers. Strategic buyers, I always say, you know, maybe you have like a 5% chance with a strategic buyer and they'll value your business entirely different from the majority of buyers, which are definitely going to be looking at your profitability. So you got some great advice right off the start. Tell me about, this is maybe a shameless plug question, but how did Acquire.com and the team help you? Like, what did we do?
You guys were so awesome. Like, it was, just like walking us through with the buyers, it felt like every time that I made a wrong decision, it was made wrong. But you guys have told me numerous times, Luke, don't do that. Don't do that. I'm like, I still think I'm going to do it. But you were there along the way. Kai was incredible, like just in making sure that we were talking with vetted buyers, making sure that we were getting a good deal. And just like, I don't know, I love when you called me for the first time. And when I was talking about the offer, I'm like, I don't know, because it's a little bit lower than our listing price. And you asked, you're like, how old are you? I'm like 23. And you said, take the money and run, you know?
I remember that.
I just thought that was really cool that it was like, you know, just having the brokers along with us, you guys really just helped tailor the buying experience to whatever would be best for me.
So tell me about, I appreciate that. And I definitely enjoyed our conversations during the acquisitions. Because there was a few times that we had to call you and be like, I wouldn't recommend doing that. But, you know, it all worked out. Do you want to walk through? Okay, so, you know, you were super prepared on Acquire.com. You spoke to a lot of buyers. You have a great business. How did you land on the person, the buyer, the group that eventually acquired your business? What made them stand out?
They went to the same church as me. So it was like, we're both members of like the same like LDS faith. And so we got on a call and just like, I feel like that instantly built like a little bit of rapport and trust. And so our deal looked a little bit different than it would in most case scenarios. But I'm like, these guys, we've probably got pretty similar moral standards. So let's just go for it.
Yeah, trust in acquisitions is huge. You know, just being able to get along with the buyers and, you know, having that goodwill built. There's a saying I say repeated. I probably even told you this, but you can't do a good deal with a bad person. Like if you just can't trust your buyer, and that goes for the buyer too. If they feel like they just can't trust the seller, due diligence is going to be like pulling teeth. You know, it's going to be such a headache for everyone involved.
Yeah, that was kind of, so I mean, not to say that we couldn't trust our first potential buyer, but it was, we just didn't do like a great job of vetting the buyer because we got emails from you and from, or I think just from Kai at that point, and you know, how hard can it be, right? All we got to do is just reply to the messages. I don't think we need someone walking us through every step. And I don't know if we had Kai or you hop on those calls, you guys probably would have been like, hey, make sure this guy can show you proof of funds, because really, I mean, that's what it was at the end of the day. He didn't have the money that he said that he did. And so it kind of delayed our acquisition about 2 months, which, you know, looking back, it's like, you know, kind of a drop in the bucket, right? Like not too long. But at the time, it felt like just the end of the world when that deal fell through.
Yeah, I remember, I think I was on like, it was around like Christmas or something, and you had like a partial close. You want to talk about that?
So I like, we were going up to my wife's family for Christmas, right? And I didn't want to go up without having closed the deal, because we've been working on it since like September, and
you wanted like Acquire.com swag too, I'm pretty sure.
So I already told, you know, everyone, I'm like, we're closing, it's whatever, right? And then the deal falls through in November, and I'm like, oh no, I'm gonna look like just the world's biggest moron, right? Going up, and you know, how'd the sale go? You got all the money in your account? No, it's not there yet, right? So we get to, you know, it's, we start talking with the new buyers just the day after Thanksgiving, right? And they were just incredible. They wanted to move fast. They were just super nice and showing us proof of funds and just really vetted buyers. And so they're like, well, we don't have all the cash right now to do the deal, but because they were going through the SBA process, but like, we can put down, you know, probably like 20% of like the deal, or 15% of the deal right now. I'm like, let's do it. Then we can say that we were officially closed before Christmas. I can wear the swag and not feel like a fraud, you know?
I remember that. And then, So, I mean, little tip maybe for people listening is, you know, if you're working with a buyer with SBA loan, as you know, sometimes there's some things that can be out of your control, because now you're bringing in a third party, which is a bank. And so you're waiting on the bank to approve things. I remember you had a document that was like faxed over to like escrow or something like that.
The bank was, I mean, they were, I don't want to hate on banks, right? But the SBA loan is just like a total pain. It's super difficult to do. So I think in total, it ended up taking like almost 90 days to get it all the way processed. And like, we weren't like a huge acquisition, you know, like 500 grand is, it's good, but like Acquire.com selling much bigger deals, but the SBA loan just takes forever.
The process is the same for 500K or up to, you know, 5 million.
Oh, like, really?
Typically, yeah, because you have to go through just a number of different approvals. I'm not an expert in it, but every time I've seen an SBA loan come in, it generally will take longer. Because even once you sign that LOI, just like you did, you have to go to the bank with a signed LOI, say, hey, here's all the tax returns, here's the price that we're paying, here's, you know, clean financials, so the bank can underwrite the deal and then issue the loan. So some banks move really fast. I've seen, so it depends on what bank you're working with as well. Some move slower than others, some are super quick, I'd say yours was pretty good, but I've seen it makes you feel better.
Okay. But I told myself, if I got to pay an extra 2% interest rate, I'll do that to avoid an SBA next time. So when I make an acquisition.
Well, tell me about, okay, so now that you've successfully sold a business and, you worked with some awesome buyers, you prepared the business well, you built a great SaaS business. If you had to go and give advice to maybe a younger version of yourself or just another person looking to sell their SaaS startup, what's like the three things that, come to mind that you would tell them? Like, hey, these are things you got to do. Here's some things to avoid. Three top tips.
Like number one, like just go all the way in, right? I mean, at first I when we first started Revive, I was in it, but I'd been doing sales for a while before that. So I was like, I'll keep kind of doing what I've got on the side, but just commission only. And I kept doing that for like the first year that I ran Revive. And like, I made good money while I was doing that, but sometimes I'm like, well, did I trade, $150,000 for $1 million or $2 million added onto my acquisition price? So like, if you've got a good idea and if you like it, just roll with it, right? So that's number one. Number two would be just network, right? People aren't going to see you as a threat, and that changes as soon as you're out of college, right? Once you lose kind of that, like, oh, I'm a student kind of, phrase, people, they're just not going to be as, they'll still be willing to help you, but a direct competitor is not going to hop on a call with you and show you their CRM and show you their processes. Whereas as a student, people would probably be willing to do that because they don't see you as a threat, and a lot of them see it as a way to get back. So like, surround yourself with good mentors, and then maybe for a third one, just run profitably, right?
That's the path to getting acquired these days. Is I always say profitability is king, and that's what most buyers are looking for. So, and obviously you want to make a business that's actually profitable. So all great tips. But Luke, tell me, what made you decide to get into entrepreneurship at such a young age? You're 23 and I'm talking to you, and you've already had a company acquired, and I'm excited to talk about what you're doing next. But have you always been an entrepreneur? Like, were you selling baseball cards when you were like 10 or something like that?
What's funny is, like, so my dad, he's like a commercial insurance agent, and I just decided, I don't even remember what it was, but like in like my first grade yearbook where they all wrote like what you want to be when you grow up, I wrote, I want to be an insurance agent. And so I always thought that's what I wanted to do. And then when I was 18, I moved to Brazil. So I lived in Brazil for 2 years, just like teaching English classes and other things like that. And it was like kind of just like an eye-opening experience for me, where I was like, I'd love to do things like this and have experiences like this throughout the rest of my life. And like, you just got to really choose what you want to do. You have to be really intentional about what your career path is if you want to live a lifestyle where you can, go do something like that for 2 years and just not worry about finances. And so when I got home, I started going to school and stuff. And then they like put out a report where they showed how much the average person was making out of school. And I was like, the business school is like 70 grand, maybe 80 grand with bonuses and stuff. I'm like, you go to school for 4 years and then you walk out and that's what you make. I think I can make more on my own. And so I started Revive, not knowing if that's what I was going to do for the rest of my life, but just knowing like, I can definitely make more than 80 grand doing this.
That's awesome, man. You're an inspiration. I remember when I went into college, I knew from like an early age I wanted to be an entrepreneur. I always joke and say, like, some people grow up and they want to be like the NFL or quarterback of an NFL team, whatever. I really just wanted to be a CEO of a company or something like that. So when I went into college, I had no intention of going to class I didn't even know if I was going to graduate, but I figured out a way to do the bare minimum. But what I would do every summer,
Steve, get degrees.
I graduated with a 2.07 GPA. So literally, I'm pretty sure at my school, I have the record for because the only people that can have a lower is like the 2.06 and 2.05 and below 2.0 you can't get a degree. But what I would do is I literally understood kind of what you were saying is like the path that I want or the life that I want to build, it's not going to happen with a job. And so I knew I had to build an asset. And my goal was to then eventually sell that asset. And so what I do every summer is I build a new business and I'd enter in our entrepreneurship program or contest, business plan competition, whatever you call it. And I, I've been back to speak at, I went to Chico State and I always joke, I'm the only person to win fourth, third, second, and finally first in that competition because I'd enter every single year.
Cool.
Yeah. Again, college is, if there's some young listeners listening to this, you know, college is a great time because, you know, you have class, sure, but you also have just so much free time to really think about, you know, businesses to build. And I'm sure you are surrounded by people that, you know, are ambitious, that can bounce ideas off of. I had that experience. Did you have that experience in college? I kind of...
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, so one of my professors, he like ran all the sales over at Oracle for like the first 10 years of his career, right? And so he like... You know, I showed him what I was doing. He's like, oh, that's awesome. And like, he sits down with me and he like basically writes out these email campaigns for me that we send out. And like, they had like a super great conversion rate. And so up until that point, we were just doing cold calling. So he kind of opened my eyes to like email campaigns, retargeting ads, those sorts of things.
And, shout out to that guy. Cause sales, like, you know, when I started my first business, cold calling was a big part of it. But what we were selling was mobile app to restaurants when the iPhone first came out. And I remember being like in my, you know, crummy college apartment, you know, being like, hey, do you have like a mobile app strategy? And the restaurant would be like, hey, are you talking about like appetizers? Like, what are you talking about? So, but my point is like, if you can cold call and actually learn how to, you know, get past a gatekeeper, you know, in a small business, it's usually it's the manager that picks up, but it's the owner you need to actually get a hold of. So that's difficult. But if you can learn just sales, I always say, if anyone's looking to go into entrepreneurship at a young age, and maybe you don't have an idea, maybe get a sales job to start. So that is awesome. You had a high level Oracle sales exec giving you guidance. That's awesome, man.
He was awesome. Like, I attribute a ton of our success to that guy. Just, he did a great job of teaching me, and just, I feel like he kind of took me under his wing and helped me out a lot.
That's awesome. And you find that, you know, and you can find that at any stage in life, you know. So for other people listening, you know, college isn't obviously the only time to start a business, but it's a great time if you have that opportunity. But Luke, let's go. What are you doing now? Has it changed since the last time we spoke?
So as we were selling, it was like the last week, and I call Andrew and I'm like, Andrew, I think I'm gonna buy a business today. It's $1 million.
And you had not received funds yet.
I've not received my funds. So I'm like, I'm gonna put all of my money that I'm getting into this business, right? So I was getting about 500K. I probably had 150K saved up. So I'm like, I'm just going to give him that as a down payment, pay the rest when I get paid out. And Andrew's like, Luke, I'm not even going to talk to you if this is your idea. Like, do not do this. And I'm like, I think it's a great idea. And eventually we came to a deal where he said, if you don't think about this business and buying it for the next like 3 weeks until we close, I'll put you on our Times Square billboard. I'm like, okay, that's worth it, right?
So I'm a man of my word too. You're going out there.
Yeah, he's a man of his word. But anyway, so I did kind of look at that, and after further evaluation and bringing in some other parties, I don't think I'll be moving forward with that one. But I did realize, like, what I like is bringing a business up, right? So these guys that have a great product, but that just maybe don't know how to sell it, and buying their business and then building that up. So I just actually bought a property management software, or I'm hopefully buying it through acquire.com. And as soon as that's closed, we'll just start plugging some sales into it. Cause I mean, that's how we did Revive at the beginning. It was like, there's something called white labeling, right? Which is pretty common software. So, I was like, one day, a super impulsive decision. I got online, I found like this awesome white label software, and I signed a contract with them. And my deal was like, I have 4 months where I don't pay them, and then I have to pay them $4,000 a month for the next 12 months, right? So about $50,000 in contract. Now, I didn't have a single customer at this point. And so it was like, if I can't get to 4 months revenue, like, in college, I'm like, yeah, I'm screwed. Like, I will, like, I'm going to declare bankruptcy while I'm still in school. But so anyway, so we signed the contract and everything. There's a personal guarantee on it. And, but yeah, so we, I mean, I got up to the customers that we needed, but white labeling was a great way of going. And I feel like now that I've got a little bit more capital, I can skip the white label phase and just buy a software that I like.
What you can also do, I don't know if I told you this, but my first business, again, going back to, it was called BizApps. Our whole go-to-market strategy was we would white label the platform because cold calling ended up being... it was a good strategy, but we would acquire one customer at a time. And then eventually I got a random call one time from this guy in Switzerland. I literally can recite how the conversation went, even though it was like 15 years ago. But he was building apps for these hotels in Switzerland. And I thought he owned the hotel. So I call him up and I just say, hey, thanks for figuring out how to use my janky app builder. Because it was really... Funky. You could get away with that 10 years ago where the interface is bad. Just as long as it worked. I think the level of what customers expect for a first version is kind of, but anyways, he told me he had an agency. And then my next question was, how do I get you to sell more apps to your customers? Because he told me he had like 200 plus customers across Europe, France.
Wow.
And we ended up our whole marketing strategy. So maybe think about this, Luke, for I'm sure I'll be talking to you again after this. What you can do is you can take products and then offer a white label solution. And that's what we did. And we sold to over 5,000 agencies all across the world in like 75 different countries. And so essentially what it allowed us to do is kind of have like a commodity product. And then we would just give it to or put another company's branding on it. And as you know, the benefit is you can basically sell the product and then you have a sales team that adds a service component. So you just work on the software and then you have a sales team that will go into small businesses or will provide a higher level of service than you're going to provide directly. And that helped us go from like zero to, you know, tens of millions in revenue pretty quickly. So that could be a strategy for you. Commodity businesses, white label it and, you know, give opportunity for other people that may just want to start a software company or I don't know if you're selling to, you know, like reviews is a great example where again, review rating companies, you know, they sell into web design companies. And so you can offer a white labeled solution where they now have a new product to sell to every client they've designed a website for or something like that.
Yeah. When you guys would do that, how were you prospecting these guys? Was it still cold calling the agencies or were you emailing, running ads?
So we were, I mean, these were like the good times in SaaS, in my opinion, because this is when we would load up. We would load up like Sales Loft and stuff like that, which is like Apollo or any of those email sequencing tools. We would just buy a list of every web design agency in the United States. But the response rate today is like 2% if you're lucky. Back then it was like 60 to 70%.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Responded to your email?
Yeah. Cause I mean, it was a total right place, right time business. Cause think of it this way. So the iPhone just came out. There's all these web design agencies across the country and customers started asking like, hey, like, you know, my competitor or Starbucks has a mobile app. How can I get one? And as a mobile or a web agency, you have no idea. You either have to hire a mobile developer and then you got to figure out how to make it. And then if you do that for a small business, the cost is like $50,000 to $100,000 to build a mobile app. So we came to them and we were just basically... with a simple sales script, like, hey, have you thought about offering mobile app solutions to your customers? And they're like, yeah. We're like, have you thought about hiring in-house mobile developers? And they're like, no. Like, just questions we know what they're going to say. And then we just say, would you be interested in potentially utilizing our software that makes mobile app development faster, easier, and cheaper? So you can provide mobile services to your customers. Then they're like, yes. And just such an easy close at a time when everyone was trying to figure out how to build mobile apps. So that's a story for another time. But my point is, Luke, I think with your skill sets being sales, continue to find products where it's a good product and it just needs that sales go-to-market motion. And then you can buy a bunch of different companies and do that because there's a lot of good product, especially on Acquire. I see them all the time where it's like if you can just pick up the phone and you know how to cold call and close a customer, you can make the business 100 times more successful. But not everybody has that skill set like you do.
Thanks. Yeah. That's awesome. So where would you say is like the place to be, right? So back then it was, mobile app development was big. Like today, I mean, you know, we're always talking about AI and stuff. You think that's,
yeah,
that's,
I mean,
where the money's going to be made?
I think AI, you might be kind of priced out. And what I mean by that is there's just so much venture capital going into that. And so we have a lot of AI businesses that we look to help sell. But one of the big sort of like fears of buyers is like, is this even going to be around in a year? Like AI companies are going to be disrupted by newer AI companies. So it's, I think it's too early to really tell, but there's going to be some really massive big winners in that market. But the thought process I always try to have when building businesses is you want to make a bet that's extremely obvious to you, that's unobvious to everyone today, that will become obvious over time. So what I mean by that is iPhone apps. I'm in college and all my friends have iPhones, and you know, I could clearly see like, dude, everyone's going to have one of these. So I was like in the early adopter phase of the iPhone being released. Yeah. So I got to see that. And then I was like, every business is going to want to build a mobile app. So I had a unique insight where I was like, this is so obvious to me, but no one knew how to kind of, so I kind of scrapped together an initial wireframe of, this is kind of what every restaurant would want.
Or did you hire developers?
No, so I'm not technical at all. So the backstory is I had a job board that connect, because I knew mobile was going to be big. So I just wanted to put myself in just the area. I wanted to create service area luck, like just get myself in the mobile app development space. So I bought a cheap clone script and basically ran a little job board that connected mobile developers with businesses. And I kept seeing people make the same request for a job, specifically for like high-end hotels and restaurants. And they'd say, I'll pay $50,000 to build like a loyalty app for my restaurant or something like that to bring customers back in. And then I was like, I've seen this like five times. Like, why don't I just make a template, the functionality, the hardest part to do, that it's already engineered, and I'll just change the images and stuff like that. And so I had kind of like I had like a little bit of like a, like cheat code, I guess. I was like, okay, let's just take these templates and then put a SaaS interface on so you can build it yourself and customize it.
Yeah.
So those opportunities are rare. That was kind of right place, right time. But I like the direction you're headed. I'm sure we'll chat again, but actually I know we'll chat again, but
but I have your phone number, so you know I'll call you again.
I know you will. And feel free anytime. But I love the strategy of just buying, you know, simple businesses with good products and just applying a sales strategy to it. Like it's not rocket science, but for a lot of people, you know, again, I think you'll agree with me on this, is, you know, to build a successful software company, someone has to build the product, someone has to sell the product. And not everybody can do both. So if you're able to, you know, just buy the product or buy the company outright and it doesn't have a strong sales motion, and you're able to come in, Luke, and sell that product like you did with Revive Ratings, I'm excited to see where you go, man.
Yeah, I'm excited too. I think and I think Acquire is seriously like such a good place to do that, kind of throwing you a plug, but this is true. So I was looking at like getting the software developed, and it was going to cost me like $60,000, but Acquire has a bunch of these listings from people that like make zero in revenue. So they just don't make anything. And they're like trying to sell these products that are like super high end, that probably cost about $50,000-$60,000 to build for like $10,000, you know?
You want to know what I would do if I wasn't running Acquire.com?
Yeah.
I would honestly be buying startups like that on Acquire.com. And what I would specifically look for is commodity product where there's a ton of competition. And because that just tells me, you know, there's a big need and demand in the market. And I always say, even if you come in 1,000th place in a market, you can still build like a multi-million dollar business. So that's your bar. You're not trying to build a $1 billion business, but you're trying to build a bit like a $5-10 million business. So you look for products. Like the reviews one is awesome. I think I love boring niches like you're looking at construction. And then adding in a sales motion or standing up, you know, maybe they have one marketing channel stood up and you're able to stand up two other ones, whatever it may be. But basically, great product, but terrible go-to-market strategy. They're just not able to figure out how to get customers. I'd be buying those businesses all day and then figuring out kind of like a cookie cutter, sort of like, all right, so this company handles bringing in leads. This team handles closing you know, this team helps with SEO, whatever that go-to-market motion might be.
Yeah.
I basically buy, you know, similar companies and then apply that to it. I haven't thought this all through, obviously, too much because I'm a little busy, but
no, for sure. But
you're headed in that direction. Yeah. And that makes a lot of sense.
You'd go buy like, for example, like I know I can sell to like a local business, right? Like I know how to get through to them and everything. So you'd say I'd go buy like three products that the same customers could use and then.
But I would start one at a time. Like you don't want to bite off more than you can chew. Cause
that's where
I was kind of like, Luke, like let's get this acquisition closed. Like don't roll yourself immediately into like another business. You know, wait one foot in front of the other. But essentially, like I think some of the biggest opportunity on Acquire.com is, you know, typically with businesses where I'd probably look a little higher in terms of revenue. Just because I have maybe a little bit more capital that I'd put into it. But there's so much you can learn from existing customers. Like I would just interview the whole list. How'd you hear about us? What do you like about the product? What do you hate about the product? Because with most products, I always say, you know, there's a bunch of bells and whistles, but typically most of the value is derived from 80% of usage. So I'd figure out,
okay,
what's like what's the one feature if I took it away, you'd cancel immediately. And then what's like the nine other things that we do that, you know, you kind of don't care about. So I'd really, and that would kind of define sort of the positioning and the sales strategy. Cause again, some of the biggest mistakes I see with businesses that are built by technical founders that can easily be addressed. And maybe this is great for, you know, other founders to listen is, you know, how is the business position? Is it clear who this product is for? Are you clearly stating what problem you solve? Sometimes I read descriptions and I'm like, I have no idea what this business does. And so we have to kind of like dissect a little bit and then apply a strong go-to-market strategy that, you know, aligns with your strength, with you with sales. So I would just find great products that can use a direct sales approach specifically to SMBs and just rinse and repeat, man.
And so you're saying like wait to buy each one. So would you buy one, work it for a year, sell it, buy another one? Or would you buy it, work it for a year, buy another one, keep working both of them, and then sell them off as, you know, the right time comes up?
That's a great question. It depends on what your goals are. I mean, if you're looking for, I would probably sell the first couple if I'm just, you know, thinking out loud. Because I'd want to get the, you know, that capital back so I can, you know, invest it into maybe a larger business or diversify, you know. Because when you have just one business, all your eggs are in one basket.
Yeah.
And so I'd want to put a little bit in the stock market, go back, maybe buy another business, see if I can do that. Because there is, you know, a group of entrepreneurs where you're really good at going from 0 to 1 million. But to go to one to 10 million, that requires a team, systems, processes. That's a great time to sell if that's not something you're interested in. Or that's a great time to buy if you're able to go from 1 to 10 million. So I'd focus on a 0 to 1 and just kind of do that back and forth. And then once I get to a certain point of confidence, I think that's when I'd start, you know, keeping the businesses and start thinking of, you know, how do I create, like, instead of just getting a big lump of cash all at once, how do we create like a river of cash that just is endless in terms of, you know, generating profits from the businesses that you've bought, you've applied a new go-to-market strategy, and then you're not working in the businesses, you're working on the businesses, if that makes sense.
No, that makes a lot of sense. That was always, you know, that was kind of our goal with Arrive at the end. It was just make sure that like we're not employees, that were just like we could leave the business and the next day like the owners could figure everything out. And I mean that the transition kind of worked out that way, but like there was a lot of work put into that where we were hiring people to take care of certain things and just setting up really smooth processes where when we stepped out, like I get like an email a week from Adam, our buyer, but not much more than that.
That means you delegated extremely well. So hats off to you, Luke. Let's end it on that note. Well,
cool.
Congrats again on that acquisition, dude. I'm excited to, I know I'll have you on this podcast again, but in the meantime, enjoy the win, man. Again, super happy for you. I'm glad we were able to chat.
Hey, thank you so much. I appreciate it, Andrew.
I appreciate you, Luke. Congrats. And
it's good talking with you.
I look forward to when I see you call me up randomly again.
Okay, you'll see it soon.
All right, see you, Luke. Cheers.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Startup Acquisition Stories podcast. If you enjoyed what you heard today, make sure to like and follow on your preferred channel. If you know a friend or colleague that's thinking about selling their startup and don't know where to start, please share it with them. For more information on Acquire.com and how we can help you start conversations with serious buyers with acquisition targets ranging from 50,000 up to 50 million or more, check us out at Acquire.com. We'll see you next time.